Mr. Speaker.
Order.
This week in the New Zealand House of Representatives, John Key's National-led minority government moved its 2016 budget out of the debating chamber and into the committee rooms for detailed scrutiny of the government's spending estimates for the next financial year. They are contained in the Appropriation 2016-17 Estimates Bill, and the 11-hour debate on its second reading, known as the Budget Debate, ended shortly before 9 on Tuesday night, with the government's right of reply exercised by Associate Finance Minister Paula Bennett, who wound up with tributes to her more senior cabinet colleagues.
It's the hard work and dedication of people like Bill English, who tirelessly work for this country, and giving people security and sensible policy and options, and a budget that fundamentally makes the biggest difference, Mr. Speaker. And alongside a leader like John Key, who backs him with that kind of commitment that we see for this country, this is a budget that has delivered, Mr. Speaker, and I commend it to the House. Thank you.
Members, the question is that the amendment in the name of the Leader of the Opposition be agreed to. Those of that opinion will say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no.
No.
The noes have it. The noes have it. The clerk will conduct a party vote.
New Zealand National, 59 votes opposed.
New Zealand Labour,
32 votes in favour.
Green Party,
14 votes in favour.
New Zealand First,
12 in favour.
Māori Party,
2 votes opposed.
ACT New Zealand,
1 vote opposed.
United Future,
1 vote opposed.
Members, the ayes are 58, the noes are 63. The motion is not agreed to.
Deputy Speaker Chester Burrows then put the motion, with the vote this time reversing to accentuate the positive.
Members, the ayes are 63 and the noes are 58. The motion is agreed to.
And so the government's budget moved along another step, with the three smallest parties in the House honouring their formal agreements to vote with National on issues of confidence and money supply. Within 24 hours, though, two of those parties, United Future's Peter Dunn and the Māori Party, crossed the floor to add their 3 votes to the 58 of the main opposition parties, Labour, the Greens and New Zealand First, giving them the bare majority needed to move a members' bill one step closer to a final reading. That was Sue Moroney's long-running paid parental leave bill, on its second time around and on Wednesday afternoon, about to enter the stage where the House sits as a committee, with MPs allowed to speak more than once, creating the opportunity for the delaying tactics of a filibuster. Chairing the committee, Assistant Speaker Trevor Mallard took the first call from Labour's Sue Moroney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's with a sense of strong deja vu that I rise to take a call on part one of the Parental Leave and Employment Protection 6 months paid leave amendment bill. And it is my sincere hope that we don't see a repeat of what we saw last time around. The use of the filibuster against a bill that is aimed to actually support families and children, I thought was particularly ugly last time around. And only accentuated by having to listen to speech after speech after speech from Mike Sabin, telling us how to parent responsibly.
Order.
Mr. Mallard reminded Sue Moroney of the standing order on relevancy.
This is a debate on this bill, on this part, and it is a narrow debate, referring to previous bills and previous debates is out of order.
But if Mike Sabin's role in debates on the first version of Ms. Moroney's bill were no longer relevant, his resignation as National's MP for Northland in January last year had proved to be critical to the success of the second version being debated on Wednesday. With National's caucus down by 1 and Parliament's total muster temporarily reduced to 120 MPs, the ACT Party's David Seymour gave the government the extra vote to stall the bill when its third reading in February ended in a dead heat of 60-60. The 57 of the 3 main opposition parties, Labour, Greens and New Zealand First, boosted by 3 from the Māori Party and Peter Dunn. But then Mike Sabin's seat was won by New Zealand First leader Winston Peters, putting the opposition within reach of a majority when up against National and ACT. Nevertheless, despite looking defeat in the face one more time, Nationals whips did as Ms Moroney predicted, even drawing on their front bench, with senior ministers like Nick Smith coming down to the chamber to help their backbenchers.
The reason on members on this side of the House say that, yes, we're in favour of extending paid parental leave, but at a rate that is affordable.
But Nick Smith's idea of affordability didn't match Sue Moroney's.
As the member promoting the bill, I've worked hard to make sure that it is affordable for the country, and part one expresses that because what it does is it doesn't say, let's get to 26 weeks paid parental leave tomorrow or even next year. What part one does is it says, let's implement this in a staged way that is affordable for the country by increasing paid parental leave on the 1st of April next year to 22 weeks.
The question of affordability unresolved. Sue Moroney's paid parental leave bill nevertheless emerged from its committee stage intact, thanks to the support of the Maori Party and Peter Dunn. And it's now ready for its third and final reading, and then possibly sudden death if the government backs its argument that it's not affordable by using the financial veto. The next member's bill debated on Wednesday night was also from a Labour MP, Adrian Ruafe, also in its committee stage and aimed at making parliamentary under-secretaries subject to the Official Information Act. As the only parliamentary under-secretary in this parliament, the ACT member for Epsom, David Seymour, was justified in feeling picked on.
By excluding a number of other possibilities, this bill has been very narrow in scope. But Mr Chair, it also tells us something about the motivations of the member in charge, and I think the people at home will often judge politicians by their motivations.
But it was David Seymour's motives that came in for scrutiny after he put this question to the Prime Minister on Tuesday.
Does this government have a policy for people who appear homeless but are actually just renovating?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, no, but maybe we should get one.
Order.
Next day, there was another question for Mr Key from the ACT MP.
Has the Prime Minister seen any other reports of government trading regulatory favours for low-cost Thai labour?
Speaker.
Right, Speaker, Honourable Prime Minister.
I am aware of a work that's been undertaken through cheap Thai labour in Samoa, but the man said, and I quote, he was consistent of nothing more than helping his constituents. That, of course, was Taito Phillip Field.
Order.
Opposition leader Andrew Little complained to the Speaker, David Carter.
Mr Speaker, it's become apparent that the member for Epsom is now routinely using question time to raise questions that bear little or no relation to the primary question, and in this case, asking a question about a matter that is absolutely not the business of this House at all.
Order. I watch all supplementaries, but I watch the supplementaries coming from Mr Seymour with particular vigour. On this occasion, I made a relatively instant decision that the question was in order. I had no idea where the answer would go. I can't preempt where an answer will go, but if at any time I sense a question has been put down for no other reason than to attack an opposition party, I will, as I've done in the past, rule it out of order. The member makes a reasonable point. I will be as vigilant as I can.
Now back to the budget, and Wednesday morning saw ministers fronting up to select committees to defend their department's spending estimates, as Rhys Lyon reports.
Social Housing Minister Paula Bennett was one of the first ministers to front up to a select committee during the week, appearing before the Social Services Committee to defend this year's budget estimates for Vote Building and Housing, where she told the committee about her ministry's response to the growing homelessness problem.
What we did was, back in January last year, we set up a review of the emergency housing across New Zealand. We went out and took some time over that, worked with all of the NGOs that work in this area, and they just said they can't plan ahead to do new beds, they can't plan ahead as to what they do, when literally they're relying on philanthropists and their own fundraising efforts.
The minister said that's where she stepped in with additional funding.
Then at that point we put in $500,000 because we just recognised that NGOs were at a critical point. That went to about 16 organisations that MSD had a current contracting relationship with.
Ms Bennett later faced questions from committee members, including Labour's Phil Twyford, who asked her if she accepted one estimate that suggested more than 40,000 people were homeless.
It depends on what the sort of definition of all of that is. Homelessness is those that are rough sleeping and have absolutely no options. For some of those, you count those people that are in prison or in hospitals, that are staying with family, that are in overcrowded, that are in garages, that are living in a whole lot of different sort of circumstances. I'm not sure I do agree with the sort of 42,000, or I think there's a whole lot of definitions underneath that. But as, I mean, I wouldn't be doing the work I'm doing and trying to increase the number of beds in emergency housing and bring on more supply if I didn't think there was a problem.
Following Paula Bennett at the Social Services Committee was Building and Housing Minister Nick Smith, who outlined some of his ministry's priorities.
Number one is obviously increasing housing supply with a particular focus in Auckland. The second is in terms of wanting government policy to skew the market in favour of the first home buyers.
In response to questions from opposition committee members about the quality of those first homes, Nick Smith said first home buyers had to be realistic.
The vast bulk of first home buyers will not be buying a new home. I asked members around this table to consider how many of you was your first home a new home. Mine certainly was not. Mine was an ex-state house. And equally so for them. Actually, there is nothing new about the fact that the bulk of our first home buyers will be buying existing homes, and it's equally important that we are able to provide them with support to be able to buy into those homes. The classic Kiwi story is you buy an older home, you do it up, and you trade yourself up over time, and that is part of the Kiwi tradition of which I endorse.
Building and Housing Minister Nick Smith. The following day, it was the turn of Transport Minister Simon Bridges to appear before the Transport and Industrial Relations Committee for its review of Vote Transport, where he faced questions about the rising road toll from Labour Party committee member Sue Moroney.
We're tracking now for a third year of increase in a row against a trend of decades of decline in the road toll. What work are you undertaking in this forthcoming year to address that?
I think you're right, broadly speaking. There's no question that we've had an incredibly disappointing last 2 years, albeit, you know, if you wanted to take a statistician's or forecaster's long-range view of this, that the overall a trend still seems to be declined. But look, the uptick is incredibly disappointing.
Mr Bridges said the government was addressing the road toll problem.
In terms of campaigns, but also, you know, variable speed limits, signage, driver behaviour, raising the age at which you need booster seats, the alcohol laws, etc., etc., and then the roads. And I, for my part, think that's, you know, a very significant contributor.
It's worsened despite those measures. My question was about what you're investing.
Well, it hasn't worsened.
It has worsened. The road toll's worsened despite those interventions.
Over the long range, it hasn't worsened. But the last 2 years have seen an uptick. It was incredibly disappointing.
And that's when those measures were implemented that you talked about.
So Moroney there. Next week, committees will continue their scrutiny of budget allocations for government ministries, including education, corrections, finance and defence.
That report from Rhys Lyon. Also this week, MPs voted to congratulate the Queen on reaching her 90th birthday. That was on Tuesday, and the next day began with tributes to Sir Graham Latimer, led by Education Minister Hekia Parata.
Mr Speaker, Sir Graham Latimer strode tall as a New Zealander, certainly as a Māori New Zealander, but as a New Zealander. He was a husband, father and grandfather, a railway worker, a soldier, a farmer, and some might think a somewhat unlikely leader who rose through the ranks of local leadership and emerged on the national scene. And I'm sure we join with his family in not just mourning his passing, because he lived to 90 years of age with a huge string of achievements, but we should celebrate his life and we should thank him for the contribution that he has made to the ongoing conversation of who we are as a bicultural, multicultural, multilingual, modern New Zealand nation. Tēnā koutou, haere atu rā e tā ngā mihi nui, kia koutou. Kia ora.
Education Minister Hekia Parata leading tributes on Wednesday to Sir Graham Latimer, while congratulations to the Queen on reaching her 90th birthday were led by the Prime Minister John Key.
Mr. Speaker, I move that this House congratulate Her Majesty the Queen on the occasion of her 90th birthday. On the 21st of April this year, Queen Elizabeth II celebrated her 90th birthday. New Zealand has marked this occasion in a number of ways, including in the naming of this year's Queen's Birthday Honours List, with 21 gun salutes on the 21st of April and again yesterday, and with a service of celebration at Wellington's Cathedral tomorrow evening. The Queen's life has spanned some extraordinary events, changes and celebrations. She was born in 1926 when the New Zealand population was just 1.4 million people and Gordon Coates was Prime Minister. She became Queen of New Zealand when she was 25 years of age. Much has been said of the Queen's lifetime of service, and she is widely respected for the grace and dignity she has brought to her reign. She's also been supportive and encouraging of some profound changes in society, technology, and culture over the years. A striking example is the way the Commonwealth has altered since the young Princess Elizabeth made her pledge of lifelong service on her 21st birthday in 1947. That pledge was to the people of the British Commonwealth and Empire, which included the seven independent members of the Commonwealth, of which New Zealand was one. This year, in her Commonwealth Day message, Her Majesty spoke of diversity, inclusiveness and acting for the common good. The audience for that message was the populations of 53 independent countries. The Commonwealth today includes some of the world's largest, smallest, richest and poorest countries, spanning five regions. They've all chosen to join this organisation and retain a link to its shared inheritance and value. That is, I believe, a testament to the Queen's stewardship of the Commonwealth family in a way that has enabled it to adapt and remain relevant through some remarkable changes. The Queen has been a steadfast figure in New Zealand's national consciousness and the embodiment of our system of constitutional monarchy, and as a touchstone for our democratic principles and institutions. Today I'm pleased to announce New Zealand's gift to the Queen to mark her 90th birthday, a new education centre at the Pukeahu National War Memorial Park has been chosen as the gift from New Zealand to acknowledge the special event for the Queen and will be named the Queen Elizabeth II Pukeahu Education Centre. I wish to offer my warmest congratulations to Her Majesty the Queen.
The question is that the motion be agreed to. Andrew Little.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I join with the Prime Minister in extending the congratulations of myself and the Labor Party to Her Majesty on the celebration of her 90th birthday, which we did over the weekend, but of course we know it actually happened about 6 weeks ago. As I've said before, Her Majesty has served with grace and dignity, and she has raised both the stature and the popularity of the monarchy here in New Zealand and right across her realm, even amongst ardent Republicans like myself. Queen Elizabeth has a special connection to this House. She was the first reigning monarch ever to open a parliament here in New Zealand. As the Prime Minister has acknowledged, her reign has included or surpassed some of the major historic events of her 60 years, politically, from Churchill to Cameron, culturally, from BBC at the Proms to Britain's Got Talent, and, of course, from Home Guard, Home Watch to Apple Wristwatch. In her reign, she has appointed 13 Governors-General of New Zealand, and in September that will be 14. She has overseen 14 New Zealand Prime Ministers, and, of course, in November next year, that will be 15. And she has presided over 41 All Black captains and 610 men who have pulled on the black jersey. And she has superintended one attempt to remove the Union Jack from the New Zealand flag. Mr. Speaker, the fact that Her Majesty continues to do her duty with considerable vim and vigour at the age of 90 is a testament to her character, to her dedication and her sense of duty to all people in the realm and across the Commonwealth, and we give her our warm congratulations.
Dr. Kennedy Graham.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Green Party shares in the nation's expression of goodwill to Her Majesty on the occasion of her 90th birthday. Our collective goodwill is due to an extraordinary and indeed quite unique life already lived, and for us in this particular realm, her continuing reign in New Zealand. Her Majesty is the symbol of the unity of our country, something that is quite different from the composition and functioning of this legislature. The Queen has reigned in New Zealand for 64 years. That comprises a long, not to say tortuous, flowing of the political rivers since 1952, when East Germany looked out on the West, when Churchill and Truman and Adenauer and Nehru led their nations, and when Yvette Williams won the gold for New Zealand in Helsinki. The issue of New Zealand's constitutional future is not the matter before us today. Suffice to say that this subject will inevitably be explored at the appropriate time, including in this House. That is entirely compatible with an expression of goodwill, respect, and affection for Queen Elizabeth of New Zealand. Nō reira, tēnei te mihi aroha, hāri hurito ki te kuini, tēnā tātou katoa.
Mr. Speaker.
The Right Honourable Winston Peters.
Mr. Speaker, we join in celebrating 90 years of Her Majesty's life in this second Elizabethan era, one that would be made complete should Britain show its independence from an ungrateful European parliamentary yoke and come back to the Commonwealth. Now, 14 Prime Ministers in New Zealand have come and gone during her reign, some memorable, and others, alas, far less so. But thankfully, we have had but one Queen. Indeed, that continuity means she has worked with well over 150 Prime Ministers and other of her realms. Now, some in this House believe we should become a republic. Maybe that will happen, or maybe it won't, because if anything, our young recognise that while many countries have presidents, few have monarchies like New Zealand. To our sovereign Queen, Elizabeth II of New Zealand, New Zealand First joins with other New Zealanders in saying, long may she reign.
Speaker, the Honourable Te Uruara Flavel.
Tēnā koe, Mr. Speaker.
Tēnā koe.
Reo Māori. Tēnei te tuake ki te whaiwhai haere ngā kōrero, e te tuku ngā mihi ki te kuini o ngā rangi, ko eke ki te ono te kautau. Me mihi rā ki aia, a koia te rā, e whaiwhai haere ngā rārangi kingi, ngā rārangi kuini o ngā rangi, ko eke ki tēnei o ngā taumata. A rā, te noho hei tumuaki o ngā rangi o tira mo New Zealand. Iau e tūnei, a me whai wāhia noho ki au mo te hunga mate. Rā, ka taino kā rongo mo te matenga o tā kere mā rātema. A koia tērā i tūtaki te kuini, e ngā tau ko hipo ake ki te kōrero mo tēnei mō mo te Treaty o Waitangi. No eira ka tangi ake ki ai a koia tērā ko riro i nā tata nei, a waiho a tā kere ama ki nā kāhui mate e tangi henei e te motu i tēnei wā. Ka hoki mai ki a tātou, e te whare tēnā tātou katoa. E ngā tau ko hipa, Mr. Speaker, e tū tētahi pihopa rangatira o te motu, ko pihopa whakahuihui vērkau. E tū ki rungo o Waitangi, te papa o Waitangi, ki te wā i whakanui ai ko te hainatanga o te Treaty o Waitangi. I tērā wā i taitu te kuini o Ngārangi, ai riha piti ki mua, i tērā o ngā whakamininga. Ka motu i puta te whakatau o te pihopa. E te kuini, me hona anora ko te iwi Māori, me koe a i ngā rangi, kia whakatinana i tēnei mea mo te Treaty o Waitangi. E hari te me a ko whakatinana i tērā kōrero, engari e tohu nui tērā ko te āhutanga o te herenga, o te ao Māori, ki ngā rangi, pēhe tāia te hereheri ia tātou, a ko te kuini tētahi. Ka noho nā, hei kanohi, o i ngā rangi, anei, ko te premier, ko te kāwana tianara i konei, he ha tōna pūtaki, he ha te kei te pūtaki o ngā kōrero, ko te Treaty o Waitangi. Koina te here, e mihi ki aia ko eke ki tēnei taumata. E kupu whakamutanga, Mr. Speaker, ko tōku kuia i eke ki te kotahirau, te kaumā rua ngā tau, te wā e mate ia, wāhua tamariki tonu te kuini i tēnei wā, oeno, kia kaha ki aia, ki eke ki tērā taumata. Huri, kia ora tātou katoa.
Mr.
Speaker.
The Honourable Peter Dunn.
Mr. Speaker, the British Queen, Queen Elizabeth II, would probably be one of the most well-known
and popular people throughout the world. And I venture to suggest that is not necessarily because of the institution to which she belongs, but because of her unique values and service over the 64 years that she has occupied the British throne. She has come to epitomise dedication, humility, loyalty, service, and a number of other positive attributes. Mr. Speaker, other speakers have drawn all sorts of historical allusions to the length of the Queen's reign and how things have changed. I note that shortly after her coronation in 1953 was the last time the Welsh beat the All Blacks. I note also that the Welsh play the All Blacks again this Saturday, and I hope that the gift that the Prime Minister announced as being New Zealand's gift to recognise the Queen's 90th birthday is all that we will give them on this occasion. May she have an enjoyable year ahead, and, sir, may her lifetime of service continue to be recognised.
Mr. Speaker.
David Seymour.
Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the ACT Party, I'd like to join with other leaders in congratulating Her Majesty, our Queen, on the occasion of her 90th birthday. Long may she reign.
The question is that the motion be agreed to. Those of that opinion will say aye. To the contrary, no. The ayes have it.
The Speaker, David Carter, who later on Tuesday advised the House that he'd received a letter from New Zealand First Leader Winston Peters.
Seeking to debate Understanding Order 389, the performance of regulators in relation to the proposed joint venture between Silver Fern Farms and Shanghai Mailing. Because I am a shareholder in Silver Fern Farms, I have asked the Deputy Speaker to consider the application. I will now vacate the chair and invite the Deputy Speaker to rule on the matter.
Mr. Carter then handed over to his deputy, Chester Burrows.
Kia ora mai tātou, tēnā tātou katoa. Members, I have received a letter from Right Honourable Winston Peters seeking to debate Understanding Order 389, the performance of regulators like the Financial Markets Authority in relation to the proposed joint venture between Silver Fern Farms and Shanghai Mailing. The letter seeking an urgent debate was received on Friday the 3rd of June. It was not accompanied by any authenticating material. Previous speakers have ruled every statement in a letter seeking an urgent debate must be authenticated, and that applications for an urgent debate that are not accompanied by authenticating material will be declined on that ground. The application is therefore declined. Call on Government Order of the Day number one.
Point of order. Point of order.
Point of order.
Point of order, Speaker.
Point of order, the Right Honourable
Mr. Speaker, you have my letter to the FMA, which is all the authentication you need. If you're referring to some other reference, like the 574 pages that they got in China, not here, that's another matter. But if you want authentication as the complaint, I sent you my letter and you have it.
The letter was received over the member's signature. There was no accompanying authentication. And don't call out while I'm on my feet. The member's been here probably longer than most other people, and he knows the rules, and I won't be trifled with in that regard. The application calling for the urgent debate is declined on the basis that it didn't have authentication.
Deputy Speaker Chester Burrows, while David Carter was back in the chair on Wednesday to rule on the other snap debate application this week, also from New Zealand First, but this time from their deputy leader.
I've received a letter from Ron Mark seeking to debate Understanding Order 389, the release of the New Zealand Defence White Paper today. The release of the paper is a particular case of recent occurrence and involving ministerial responsibility. The more difficult test is whether the release of the White Paper requires the urgent attention of the House and whether there are other parliamentary means of debating the subject. The White Paper sets out a 15-year spending plan. Select committees are currently carrying out the examination of estimates, and they will subsequently be debated in this House. This provides an opportunity to debate the government spending in relation to defence. Given the duration of the plan set out in the White Paper, there will also be ample ongoing opportunities to scrutinise it. I am not convinced that the release of the White Paper has such an element of urgency that it warrants the setting aside of the normal business of the House. The application is therefore declined.
The Speaker, David Carter. I'm Tom Frewin, and this program was made with funding from Parliament.